She couldn't help but glance up the river towards Hubert Fargin's booth, which remained cordoned off. I understand Inspector Greville is not amused that it has become a must-see sight for the more ghoulish of the day-trippers. Matt drew her arm through his and turned her gently towards the dolphin. I believe the mayor is pressing the council to remove it as soon as possible.
That would be a good thing. Hubert Fargin had no family as far as I know, so there was no one to take on his company or to drive the motor coach. It's horribly sad.
Kitty shivered at the thought of strangers peering at the gay little booth where Hubert had met such a terrible end. Miss Delaware is also out for a stroll this afternoon, I see. Vivian was indeed out for a promenade along the embankment. She was elegantly dressed as usual in a pale fawn costume, a fox fur stole around her shoulders, and one of her hats bedecked with a tall feather. Trailing behind her at a short distance, their mouths agape at such a sight, were three small urchins.
Good afternoon.
Matt raised his hat as she drew closer to them. Vivian nodded her head regally in response, making the feather in her hat dip and the urchins giggle.
I don't suppose you have seen Bobby anywhere. He was supposed to escort me to the castle tea rooms. We passed him earlier in town near the Butter Walk. I expect he'll be here soon, Kitty said.
If Vivian wanted to go to the tea rooms, she was walking in the wrong direction. Vivian wasn't really attired for a walk either, unless she and Bobby intended to take a car to the castle, as rounding Warfleet Bay on foot involved an uphill hike.
Thank you, honey. He did mention something about going to the post office.
Vivian drew her stole a little closer around her shoulders, her eyes unfriendly.
Perhaps running into Walter Cribbs delayed him, Matt said smoothly.
Vivian blinked, her scarlet lips pressing together with a snap.
Walter Cribbs? Oh, the reporter guy. Bobby always deals with the press for me, arranging interviews and such.
Matt smiled. I expect that's what will have delayed his return then. They resumed their stroll, passing Vivian as she stood waiting for the hapless Bobby to return.
You are a very wicked man, Kitty murmured as soon as she was sure they were out of earshot. Do you think it was wise to tip her off that we knew that Bobby had met with Walter?
I don't think it will do any harm. It may make them more cautious if they are unsure of who might be observing them.
Kitty glanced up to the window of her grandmother's suite as they reached the hotel entrance. She clutched his arm.
Matt, look!
He followed her gaze. Instead of the vase of red roses that had been visible from the street, a vase of yellow flowers stood in their place.
Quickly, what does it mean?
Kitty hurried into the lobby and headed for the desk.
Ellen, have I had any letters or deliveries whilst I've been out?
The young receptionist's eyes widened at the urgency in her employer's tone.
Only the flowers, Miss Underhay.
Yellow roses? Matt asked.
Yes, sir. I did as instructed, sir, and moved the other vase from the window. Have I misunderstood?
The girl looked worried.
No, Ellen, that's fine. Did the flowers come with a message? There was the instructions, miss, and I think there is a small card with them, but of course I didn't open that.
No, of course not. Thank you, Ellen.
Who delivered them? Matt asked.
Ellen frowned, clearly perplexed by the fuss.
The florist's boy, sir, on his bike.
Kitty hurried up the stairs with Matt close behind her to see if there was anything on the card with the flowers. Her fingers fumbled the key as she tried to put it in the lock, and Matt had to take it from her to unlock the door. Sure enough, the red roses had been moved to the side table on the far wall, and a fresh vase of yellow roses now stood in the window. Kitty dropped her handbag and gloves down on the sofa and went to the flowers. A small florist's envelope stood propped up against the vase. She tore it open and eased out the small square of card.
Roses for my girl. We'll see you soon. E.
She sat down slowly on the sofa.
More waiting, I suppose. Her heart was still racing.
At least you know he saw your message.
Matt examined the card. It's from the florist in town, so he's still close by.
Even if Inspector Greville can't find him.
Chapter 24. The morning of the masked ball dawned dull and cloudy. Kitty rose early to supervise the decorators as they manoeuvred the huge pots of fronded palms and peacock-embellished screens she had ordered to decorate the ballroom. The tables were grouped around the edge of the dance floor with greenery at either side of the stage and around the grand piano. Peacock feathers were also incorporated into the table decorations, and the backdrop for Vivian's performance had been changed to one showing carnival masks decorated with gold glitter.
"What do you think?" she asked Matt.
He looked around the room.
"Very splendid. Vivian must be delighted that the dolphin is going to so much trouble for her big finale performance."
"The hotel has always been about providing entertainment for local people as well as our guests. It was one of the first things Grams taught me about managing the hotel. The holiday season can be quite short, and a bad summer could be a disaster if we didn't try to entice more paying customers through our doors. The tickets we sell for visitors attending our entertainment and suppers keep our accounts healthy." The staff left the room to go for their lunch break, leaving Kitty and Matt alone.
"Talking of Vivian and Bobby, have you seen them at all since yesterday?"
"No, I've been busy in here all morning."
Matt produced a folded copy of the Torbay Herald from under his arm.
"Walter has certainly done his bit to publicise the ball."
He opened the paper out to show her. There was a picture of Vivian subtitled "Enchanting American Chanteuse" and a glowing paragraph of praise for the promised delights of the masked ball at the Dolphin Hotel.
I do hope he's not trying to ingratiate himself with me again. Oh, perhaps this is what Bobby was handing to Walter.
Kitty rolled her eyes.
But Walter is such a catch.
Matt grinned at her and stepped swiftly sideways when she lobbed a mock punch at his arm. And somehow I don't think it was simply publicity material in that envelope. Kitty's laughter was cut short by the arrival of Vivian to inspect her new set.
Darling, peacocks, how quaint. I do hope they won't be unlucky, though, the evil eye and all. I'm sure you'll have a full house. You have a wonderful piece in the local paper.
Kitty reopened the newspaper to show her. Vivian gave her an indulgent smile.
Marvelous, darling. Bobby has done a great job. Did you say your grandmother would be here in time for the performance?
Kitty shook her head.
No. My Aunt Livy is very frail since her fall, so it's taking them longer than they thought to get here. You may get to meet her if they arrive before you leave to board your ship.
Vivian pouted.
I'd like to meet her. I heard so much about her from your mother. It must have been so hard for her when Elowet went missing, having all her things around her every day while she waited for her to come back.
Yes, I think she must have found it distressing.
Matt's tone was bland.
I have very few things of my mother's. That's why it was so upsetting when my room was burgled, and when my cuckoo clock was broken. It was one of the few things I had that had been hers.
Kitty wished now she'd kept the broken clock. Instead, she'd asked the maid sorting out her room to get rid of it.
Those ugly brown wooden things with the bears and such on the front are terribly old hat now, honey. I'm sure you'll be able to get something much nicer to replace it,
Vivian said lightly as she wandered over to the piano and idly pressed a couple of keys.
Perhaps, but it won't have the memories.
Kitty wished Vivian would leave and let her get on with preparing the room. Her lack of sensitivity was as annoying as her soft southern drawl. Matt waited until Vivian had finished her tour of inspection and gone back to her room.
How did she know what your mother's clock looked like? He asked.
Kitty frowned. I don't know, I didn't notice that. I was too annoyed at how insensitively she was behaving over my mother's disappearance.
She was fishing to find out if your mother had any other belongings stashed away anywhere. I suspect that's why she's keen to meet your grandmother.
Matt refolded the newspaper. Do you think she was the person who broke into my room?
She knew what the clock was like, and Bobby could have been keeping lookout for her to make sure we didn't go upstairs.
The way your room had been ransacked, it looked as if it had been searched in a hurry, and there is no other way she could have described your clock.
Kitty shuddered.
That's horrid. Whoever broke my clock did it in temper. It looked as if it had been thrown against the wall. It could explain why Bobby always appears to be loitering around the lobby, too.
The idea that it could have been Vivian who had searched her room and broken her clock angered her deeply.
Good morning, Miss Underhay, Captain Bryant. I trust you've both recovered from your adventure the other night.
Inspector Greville strolled into the ballroom and glanced around at the decorations. His expression appeared to indicate he was impressed by the new decor.
Yes, thank you, Kitty replied. Her heart thumped a little faster. It was illogical, she knew, but she hoped he wasn't there to say he'd arrested her father, or that he'd somehow found out that she had the ruby in her possession.
Any news on Cora or Hubert Fargen's murders? Matt asked. There's been a suspected sighting of Colin Wakes a few miles from here. Constable Jones is checking it out.
Greville paced up and down in front of them.
I would like to have two of my men in attendance at the ball here tonight, Miss Underhay, if that would be acceptable.
I see. Not in uniform, I hope, Inspector Greville. My guests would be most alarmed at the sight of uniformed constables near the dance floor. The recent events in the town have already caused a great deal of concern.
The inspector paused in his pacing.
Your guests will be unaware of their presence, I assure you.
Kitty swallowed the lump of fear in her throat. There was a sense of relief from knowing that the police would be on the premises, vying with a dread that there might be more events yet to come.
Thank you, Inspector. That does reassure me. Do you anticipate any further problems during the ball? She wasn't sure how to phrase the question.
He appeared to be considering what information he could share, his brow furrowing.
I do have some concerns, Miss Underhay. Those are that whoever is searching for this gem is unlikely to cease until they either obtain it or are caught. I am also concerned that you personally may be in some danger.
His eyes appeared to bore into hers, and Kitty's conscience gave her a sharp prick when she thought of the ruby, carefully locked away inside her grandmother's secret safe.
I shall do my utmost to ensure Miss Underhay's safety, Matt said.
The inspector raised his left eyebrow slightly in a thoughtful fashion.
I don't doubt that, Captain Bryant, but I do not wish to see either of you hurt or worse. This person or persons have already murdered three people and violently assaulted another.
I understand, sir. A look appeared to pass between Matt and the inspector.
Please continue to be alert and report any suspicions to me. Good day, Miss Underhay, Captain Bryant.
He raised his hat and sauntered out of the ballroom.
Do you think he really is expecting trouble at the ball this evening? Kitty asked as soon as the door had closed behind him.
I don't know. I can understand his concern. There will be a lot of people here tonight. Everyone will be wearing masks up until the midnight reveal. The potential is there for someone unscrupulous to try something.
At least the police will be in the ballroom. You and I will be there, and Mickey and the night porter will add to our security.
I'd still feel better if you weren't in possession of that damned ruby.
The ferocity of his muttered response did nothing to reassure her. Matt, too, wondered exactly what Inspector Greville thought might happen, and what he had asked his men to look out for. It could be that he suspected Edgar Underhay or Colin Wakes might attend the ball, their identities safely concealed behind their masks. That same thought had come into his own mind, and he was pretty sure it had entered Kitty's too. He also wondered if the policeman suspected that Kitty had the ruby. The staff returned from their lunch break to finish setting out the ballroom, and he escorted Kitty to the dining room for luncheon. Vivian and Bobby were seated at their usual table and already finishing dessert as they entered the room. Matt noticed Vivian studiously ignore them as they were shown to a quiet table on the far side. Kitty appeared preoccupied as she gave her lunch order to the waiter, and he suspected that the inspector's warning was playing on her mind. "Do you think your father will attempt to contact you this evening?" he asked, once the soup course had been set before them. Kitty crumbled a small portion of her bread roll between her fingers. "He would be mad or extremely reckless if he did, wouldn't he? There will be so many people around, and who knows who will be watching me, hoping to find him." On the edge of his vision, Matt could see Bobby. He thought the man appeared uncomfortable. He had his gaze fixed on whatever was outside the window and was fidgeting in his seat. "What are you looking at?" Kitty asked, her voice soft. "Bobby and Vivian, especially Bobby, he's acting most oddly." "I can't see properly from here," Kitty grumbled. "What is happening?" The waiter cleared their soup bowls and returned with the cheese omelets and salad garnish they had ordered for their second course. Matt continued to discreetly watch as another waiter approached Bobby and Vivian's table. He appeared to hand Bobby a note. As he opened the sheet of paper and read the contents, Bobby's normally florid complexion changed to ghostly white, then to mottled purple fury. The waiter appeared to ask if there was a reply. As Bobby shook his head, the waiter took his leave. Within seconds of the man withdrawing, Bobby's head was close to Vivian's and they seemed to be locked in a heated discussion. "What's happening?" Kitty asked. "Bobby has received some kind of note which appeared to upset him, and now he and Vivian are having a quiet conversation." "She had better not let me down tonight." Kitty speared a piece of her omelette with her fork. Matt wished he could follow Bobby and Vivian as they left the dining room. He would love to know what was going on. Instead, he called over the young waiter who had delivered the note to Bobby. "You took a message to Miss Delaware's table a few minutes ago. May we know who the message was from?" Matt asked. The lad glanced at Kitty in confusion, as if unsure if it was permissible to answer Matt's query. On receiving her slight nod of consent, he started to talk.
"A boy brought it to the front desk, sir. Said he'd been promised a shilling to make sure the gentleman dining with Miss Delaware got the message."
"I see. I don't suppose you happened to catch sight of the message at all?" Matt asked. The young waiter shook his head.
"No, sir. The gentleman seemed most put out by the note. Quite angry, he seemed. Said there was no reply."
"Did he say anything at all as he read the message?" Kitty asked.
"Please think. It could be very important." "He muttered something, miss, under his breath, like, I don't know if it's important or not, though. He said something about a pound of flesh."
The boy looked perplexed. Kitty exchanged a glance with Matt.
"Thank you. You've been very helpful."
Kitty smiled at the waiter, and he dashed back to his work with an air of relief. "We had better stay alert. It appears that something is happening," Matt said. Kitty looked at Matt.
"I agree."
Chapter 25. The masked ball was due to open at 8 in the evening and to continue until 1 in the morning the next day. The house band was to play for the first 2 hours, followed by Vivian Delaware's performance for an hour. Piano music would play during the supper for the ticket holders, followed by the unmasking at midnight, with Miss Delaware singing once more for the grand finale of the evening's entertainment. Matt had arranged to meet Kitty in her grandmother's suite, so they would go down to the ball together. Since the burglary, she had been reluctant to return to her own room until all the new locks and security devices had been put in place, which had been delayed by the carpenter and his slow pace of work. The muffled sound of voices from within the room reached him as he raised his hand to knock on the door. His pulse quickened. Surely her father had not managed to gain admission.
"Come in," Kitty called.
To his relief, he discovered she was seated at the bureau, holding the telephone receiver in her hand, her mask beside her.
"Yes, Grams, it's Matt. We're about to go downstairs to the ballroom now. Did you wish to speak to him?"
Matt raised an eyebrow in inquiry.
"Yes, of course. Matt, Grams would like to speak to you."
He accepted the receiver from her, and she stood and walked away to stand in the window that overlooked the river.
"Mrs. Treadwell, good evening."
He watched Kitty as she carefully tidied the roses her father had sent her. She looked so slender and delicate as she worked.
"Matthew, Livy and I hope to be at the hotel by late afternoon the day after tomorrow. Kitty assures me that this Inspector Greville is providing protection for her within the hotel. Is this correct?"
Her tone was anxious.
"Yes. Two men will be stationed within the ballroom this evening. Don't worry, the guests won't know who they are."
"She said that scoundrel Edgar Underhay has had the temerity to try to contact her."
"Indeed, Mrs. Treadwell."
He glanced at Kitty. She had her back to him as she stared out at the night, her delicate gold dress shimmering and sparkling in the light of the side table lamps.
"Captain Bryant, Matthew, I beg you to take care of her. She can sometimes be too much like her mother, soft-hearted, impulsive, and headstrong. That man is a manipulator and a rogue. I lost her poor mother. Please don't let anything happen to Kitty."
Her voice quavered on the line.
"I will do my best, Mrs. Treadwell."
Her plea made him uncomfortable. Hadn't he already pledged those same words to another parent? His own darling Edith's widowed father had made the same request of him on their wedding day.
"Promise me that you'll take good care of my girl."
His father-in-law's words still haunted him, even though he knew there was nothing he could have done to prevent what had happened to Edith and Betty in those grim, dark days of the war.
"Kitty told me about the tunnels. I always wondered and worried for years that Eloed might have been taken into one of them."
The old woman's voice cracked.
"It's the not knowing that is the hardest. Thinking I see her on the street, passing by in an omnibus, walking in the park."
"I understand." Sometimes he thought he saw Edith. So many others had also lost loved ones, sons, brothers, nephews during the war. Missing, believed killed. No body to bury, no grave to mourn at, and the faint, desperate hope that somehow, somewhere, they might have survived, perhaps concussed or injured, with no memory to guide them home.
"That Colin Wakes was always a bad lot. His father was the same, in and out of prison. Poor Cora was too weak with Colin, always giving him money, making excuses. Poor soul."
"You think he may have been involved in the murders?" Matt asked.
"He would sell his own granny for a shilling, so I don't doubt he is up to no good."
"But murder?"
"Well, murder is another matter, Captain Bryant."
Mrs. Treadwell's warnings rang in his ears as he walked down the broad oak staircase to the lobby with Kitty, her hand on his arm. They had carefully donned their masks before leaving the suite. His mask was plain black velvet, covering his eye area and the bridge of his nose. Kitty's mask was gold and glittery to match her dress. The sound of the band greeted them as they descended the last few steps. Everywhere was a hive of activity, with guests arriving for the evening's entertainment. Ladies in fur stoles chattered and kissed cheeks as they greeted each other, while the men shook hands and looked pleased with themselves. The night porter stood by the front door, and along the corridor next to the cloakroom was Mickey, resplendent in an ancient evening suit. Moving into the ballroom, they threaded their way past masked gentlemen in evening attire, accompanying mysterious ladies in glamorous gowns as colourful as the peacock feathers in the room decorations. The ladies' masks were the more fanciful, adorned with sequins and feathers, like Kitty's. Matt swiftly identified Inspector Greville's men despite their disguises. There was something about them that immediately said police to his trained military gaze. Walter Cribbs was also present, accompanied by a photographer as he worked his way around the tables, chatting to the great and worthy of Dartmouth. He looked more like a black beetle than ever, with his mask covering his eyes under his glasses. He had to admit that Kitty's hard work had paid off. The additional greenery, painted backdrops and altered layout adding to the ambience of the room. The exotic peacock feather theme in green, gold and blue shimmered in the electric light of the glorious glass chandeliers. The dance floor was already full of people moving to the music provided by the house band. The bright young things of Torbay were out in force, their dresses daringly shorter than the more conservative length that Kitty favoured. The young men accompanying them had pomaded hair and wore evening suits in the latest wide-lapelled style. Cocktails and champagne appeared to be flowing. Kitty had darted off to admonish a young waitress who appeared to be wearing her uniform in an improper manner, so Matt wandered between the tables, listening in to snatches of conversation and looking for anyone who might be Colin Wakes or Edgar Underhay. A faint fog of cigarette and cigar smoke hung in the air, and the staff had opened the diamond-leaded windows to allow the night air to circulate around the room. Matt collected a glass of champagne from the bar and continued to monitor the room. He kept a careful watch on Kitty as she worked her way around, greeting guests. He'd thought the gold colour of her gown and her distinctive short blonde hair would be easy to spot in the crowd. But there were so many people it proved harder than he thought, which worried him more than he cared to admit. Kitty checked the tiny gold evening watch her grandmother had given her for her 21st birthday. It was almost time for Vivian Delaware's first set of the evening. Everything appeared to be going well. The room was full, and her guests looked as if they were enjoying themselves. It seemed as if the night would be a success, but she was aware she couldn't congratulate herself entirely until it was over. She began to make her way towards the stage, ready to give the announcement. The side of the conversation Matt had held with her grandmother continued to play on her mind. Perhaps she was foolish for not handing the ruby to Inspector Greville and telling him of the communication with her father. All her life, though, she had been curious about her father, where he was and why he hadn't ever come forward. Until she had seen and spoken to him, she knew she couldn't bring herself to hand over the ruby. The letter he had sent had been full of tender concern for her well-being. It hadn't held the tone of someone who wished her harm. She pressed through the throng on the dance floor, narrowly avoiding having a glass of champagne spilled on her gown by some enthusiastic revelers. Bobby was at the side of the stage, partly concealed by one of the giant pots of fronded palms. She barely had time to notice him mopping his brow with one of his coloured silk handkerchiefs whilst sipping from a silver-coloured hip flask before the band stopped playing and she was on stage. "Ladies and gentlemen, for the final night of her sell-out run here at the Dolphin Hotel, I give you the wonderful Miss Vivian Delaware." She stepped away from the microphone and down from the stage as Vivian made her entrance. Clad in a fitted emerald green glittering sheath-like gown, in a gold and purple mask with tall peacock feathers in a band encircling her head, she was a truly exotic creature. Not for the first time, Kitty marvelled at how someone like Vivian had married someone like Bobby. The spot where he had been standing was now empty. She looked around the room for him, but the dance floor had refilled, and she wasn't tall enough to see across the crowded space to find either Bobby or Matt. On stage, Vivian was singing, her tall, elegant figure swaying to the rhythms created by the house band and her own jazz musicians. Kitty's feet had started to ache from all the standing and walking she'd been doing all day, and she searched around for a vacant chair. Spotting an empty seat at a table tucked inconspicuously beside a pillar, she sat down gratefully and eased off her shoes beneath the cover of the white linen tablecloth. She wriggled and stretched out her stocking-clad toes and sighed with relief. "Champagne, Miss Underhay?" A glass appeared in front of her, placed on a paper napkin. Startled, Kitty turned to see who had delivered it, but there were no waiters in sight. She lifted the glass to take a sip and realized that there was a note folded into the napkin. She glanced around to see if anyone might be watching her. Satisfied that she could see no one, she palmed the folded paper into her hand and, using the tablecloth for cover, swiftly slipped the message into her stocking top under her garter. She would read it later in private, where no prying eyes could see. She had no sooner completed the transfer and smoothed her gown back into place when the masked, leering visage of Walter Cribbs loomed in front of her.
"Miss Underhay, Kitty, my dear, I've come to claim my dance."
His breath smelled of stale onions and whiskey, and Kitty wrinkled her nose in distaste. "I'm sorry, Mr. Cribbs, my feet hurt and I'm taking a break, so I'm not dancing this evening." "Or ever with you," she added silently. Even behind the mask, she noticed his expression change. His eyes glittered and his mouth took on a petulant twist.
"Then you must allow me to keep you company while you rest."
He slid onto the seat opposite hers, and she suddenly regretted choosing a chair with its back to the wall, as she was now effectively trapped. "Are you enjoying the ball?" She took a sip of champagne and hoped the note that had accompanied it wasn't a warning not to drink it. Although if Walter didn't go away soon, she would require something stronger to drink.
"I'm enjoying it all the more now I've finished my work and I'm with you, my darling."
Walter leered and made a grab for her hand. Fortunately, she moved more swiftly than Walter and managed to whisk her hand from the tabletop before his sweaty fingers could entrap her.
"Mr. Cribbs, I thought I had made my feelings perfectly clear to you at Christmas."
Her tone was glacial and she tried to peer around him, hoping Matt would spot her. Not that she needed his aid with Walter, but she had no energy or desire for a prolonged conversation with him.
"Ah, but my circumstances have changed since then, my love. I can understand your previous reluctance to make a match which you may have considered beneath you in financial terms, but I can assure you that my fortunes have improved materially for the better. As my wife, you would have no fears of being disadvantaged in society."
Kitty stared at him, her mouth falling open at his extraordinary speech.
"Mr. Cribbs, I can assure you that any material assets you might or might not have will never and have never entered my mind."
Surely the man was not proposing marriage to her.
"Then you can have no objection to my courtship, Kitty dearest," Walter smirked.
Kitty's mouth closed with a snap. The man had lost his mind, or he had consumed far too much whiskey.
"Mr. Cribbs, I apologize for my bluntness, but I have no desire to be courted by you, ever, under any circumstances."
She felt for her shoes with her toes to try to slip them back on again to make her getaway. The man was a lunatic.
"My dearest Kitty, you can't be serious. And please, you can call me Walter. People will think it strange for an engaged couple to be on such formal terms."
He made another dive for her and captured her fingers in his moist hand.
"Please release me immediately, Mr. Cribbs. I have no intention of becoming engaged to you. I can only ascribe your behaviour at present to an overindulgence in alcohol.
I have never knowingly given you any cause to believe I had any romantic interest in you.
Her shoes now back on her feet, she attempted to stand and extricate her hand from his.
Do sit down, my dear.
Walter's voice took on a new, more menacing tone, and he tugged her back down onto her seat.
I'm sure you would not wish to draw attention.
A jolt of fear ran through Kitty.
Please release me, Mr. Cribbs. I have work to do and no more time to spend on this nonsense.
In response, his fingers tightened on hers, causing her to flinch.
You need have no fear that I will hold your questionable parentage against you when we are married. I would never reproach you on your father's lack of patriotism or criminal record.
Mr. Cribbs, for the last time, release me and desist from this absurd conversation.
After all, my dear, you wouldn't wish your father to come to any harm, would you?
Walter leaned closer towards her, and she instinctively shrank away.
Why would my father come to any harm?
She continued to try to free herself from his grasp as the icicle of fear grew larger at the implied threat in Walter's demeanor. He drummed the tabletop with the fingers of his free hand.
My sources tell me that Inspector Greville's men are not the only people keen to speak to your father concerning a certain missing ruby and Hubert Fargen and Cora Wakes's deaths.
He tightened his grip still further on her fingers, forcing a tiny squeak of pain from her lips.
Mr. Cribbs, you are hurting me!
He relaxed his grasp just enough to stop the pain.
I'm so very sorry, my love, but I just want you to understand. It would be terrible if those other people searching for your father should find him before Inspector Greville and his men.
Kitty swallowed.
Do you know where my father is? She asked.
Walter smiled like a plump, unpleasant cat toying with a mouse.
Oh, yes, I think I know.
Then I suggest you inform Inspector Greville.
She made another attempt to extricate her hand.
Not so fast, my love. There is the small matter of the ruby. After all, it is not just your father that shouldn't fall into the wrong hands.
She gave another impatient tug, and to her satisfaction managed to free herself.
I know nothing of a ruby, Mr. Cribbs. And if you do know where my father is, then you must go to the police. Now, I must return to my guests. Please do not ever trouble me again with your unwanted affections.
She quickly stood and slipped past him before he could prevent her from leaving. Her legs trembled and she forced herself to keep moving, anxious to find Matt and update him.
Chapter 26.
She had not gone many steps when she walked directly into Matt.
Kitty, I've been looking for you.
He took hold of the tops of her arms to halt her progress.
Then where were you when that beastly Walter Cribbs was proposing marriage to me?
She demanded, her voice breaking as a tear escaped onto her cheek.
What?
Matt stared at her, concern mixed with bewilderment in his eyes.
Mr. Cribbs renewed his very unwelcome romantic advances. Then, when I rebuffed him, he tried to coerce me by threatening my father's safety. He said he knew where my father was, and implied he would reveal his whereabouts to others who were searching for him and the ruby.
Kitty dashed the tear from her cheek with the back of her hand.
Cribbs knows where your father is hiding. Are you all right?
Matt was already looking around the room for the reporter.
I'm fine, I think. He could have been bluffing. He didn't give me any kind of proof that he was telling the truth.
Her fear was subsiding now, replaced with increasing fury that Walter Cribbs had dared to lay his hands on her and threaten her in such a way.
What else did he say? Matt asked.
He assumed my reason for declining his proposal was due to his lack of means, but he claimed he was soon to be wealthy.
Kitty scowled.
The nerve of the man is incredible. I swear he was drunk.
He has expectations of money soon. I wonder where or who from.
Kitty glanced at Vivian, still performing on the stage. Bobby?
Perhaps Hubert Fajan is not the only person trying a spot of blackmail.
Kitty sniffed and shuddered.
Vivian is finishing her first set. I must make sure that the staff are ready to serve supper. Could you find Inspector Greville and let him know what Mr. Cribbs has said, please?
Matt went in search of Inspector Greville's men. He intended to make sure that Walter Cribbs was questioned as soon as possible about his claim to know where Edgar Underhay might be hiding. He found one of the constables near the entrance to the supper room and passed the message on. There was no sign of Walter in the ballroom, and Matt guessed he must have left once Kitty had rebuffed his advances. The pianist was now on stage for the supper break, so Matt decided to take a stroll out through the lobby to the embankment and check that there was nothing untoward outside the hotel. Mickey nodded to him as he passed the cloakroom.
Evening, Captain Bryant.
How's it going, Mickey? Any concerns? Mickey glanced around at the busy corridor and lowered his voice.
I don't know if you would say a concern, like, but that man who's here with the singer came past in a hurry a bit ago. Looked proper mad, he did, and he hasn't come back.
Thanks, Mickey. Matt clapped the older man on his shoulder and continued to walk towards the lobby. The entrance was quieter now that most of the guests were taking supper before the unmasking and Vivian's finale. The night porter was still keeping watch near the desk and he nodded to Matt.
Have you seen Bobby, Miss Delaware's agent, this evening?
Matt wondered if Bobby might have re-entered the hotel and headed upstairs to his and Vivian's suite.
No, sir. He went out about half an hour ago and hasn't returned.
Keep a lookout for him, would you? Matt couldn't say why, but he had an uneasy feeling building in his stomach. Bobby always stayed near the stage during Vivian's performances.
Any sign of Walter Cribbs, the reporter chap from the Herald?
Yes, sir. He left too a minute or so ago, not much after the other one.
Cool air met him as Matt stepped outside the hotel and onto the embankment. A few couples had also come outside, and he heard a girl giggling tipsily at something her companion had said. He decided to stroll towards the boat float. The further away from the Dolphin he went, the quieter the streets grew. He could hear the river lapping against the banks and smell the faint salt tang of the sea in the estuary. When he reached the marina, he decided to turn back. He was worried about Kitty. There was no sign of Walter Cribbs or Bobby. On his route back, he could see the hotel and the silhouette of the castle on the hill beyond the customs house. Light spilled from the windows of the Dolphin, illuminating the people entering and leaving. As he drew nearer to the hotel, he passed a small dark entryway. A fragment of coloured cloth caught his attention, and he pulled out his cigarette lighter to see further into the shadows. As he did so, he heard a low moan.
Bobby!
He leaned into the entry and saw Bobby sprawled, half sitting, half lying in the gutter. His jacket was ripped, his mask missing, and an ugly swelling had begun to form around his right eye.
Here, let me help you.
He dropped his lighter back into his pocket, and with some pulling and shoving, managed to get Bobby into a position where he could help him to stagger back to the hotel. Their arrival in the lobby caused something of a commotion. The night porter rushed to help him seat the unfortunate Bobby in the small back office behind the desk, away from the guests.
Bobby, what happened?
In the brighter light of the office, it was clear that Bobby had been assaulted. His head was cut and bleeding, and the black eye Matt had noticed in the alley would certainly be sore in a few hours' time. The night porter returned with a measure of brandy and one of the police constables from the ballroom.
Out taking the air. Fella jumped me from behind, Bobby muttered.
Do you want me to get Vivian? Matt asked.
Bobby's head shot up and alarm spread across his battered features.
No, she has to finish her performance. No point upsetting her yet.
He took a sip of brandy, grimacing at the taste.
Sure wish you had some bourbon. Were you robbed, Mr. Delaware? The constable had his pocket notebook at the ready. Bobby fumbled for the inside pocket of his jacket, wincing as he tried to move his hands.
Wallet is gone.
Matt noticed he still had his watch, which looked as if it was quite an expensive piece.
Would you like us to call a doctor?
He asked as Bobby let out another groan.
No, no quacks, he snapped. Did you see your assailant?
The constable inquired.
Bobby carefully shook his head.
Nope. Told ya, fella jumped me from behind. I did my best to fight him off, but he kicked me when I was on the floor. It was dark and it happened really quick.
Why were you on the embankment? Matt asked. I know you usually stay and watch all of Vivian's performances.
Bobby squinted at him irascibly through bloodshot eyes.
I needed some air. It was kind of muggy in there. At what time were you attacked, sir?
The constable licked the end of his pencil, ready to add to his notes.
About half an hour ago? I don't know, think I passed out.
In the distance, Matt could hear cheering coming from the ballroom and guessed the partygoers were removing their masks. He slid his own mask off and tucked it in his jacket pocket. The constable followed suit.
Was your wallet the only thing the assailant took?
Matt asked.
My watch is still on and my silver hip flask is in my pocket. I had about £50 in my wallet.
Matt's eyebrows raised slightly at the sum Bobby had been carrying.
I think Vivian has just started her final set. Would you like some help to get you to your room, to get you cleaned up before she comes off stage?
Bobby drained the last of his brandy, pulling a face as he did so.
No, I'll be just fine.
He struggled to his feet, swaying slightly.
Any more questions, officer?
He asked the police constable.
Not for now, sir. Will you be available tomorrow if the inspector wants to check anything with you? Sure, I'll have to wire my bank for more money, so I won't be going anywhere till we're due to board our ship home.
He staggered to the door, and a few minutes later they heard him clumping his way up the staircase.
What do you think, Constable? Any local villains likely to have set upon Mr. Delaware?
The policeman looked pleased to be asked for his opinion.
That were a fair sum of money he had in his wallet, but that watch looked expensive, and the flask would have been easy to pawn.
Perhaps the attacker was interrupted, suggested Matt.
Maybe, sir. Or maybe they were satisfied with the cash once they saw how much there was.
Vivian had changed into a crimson dress for her final hour, with a gold headband studded with red stones. Matt wondered how she would take the news of Bobby's assault and robbery. It could have been a random attack, but something about it didn't add up. Bobby had stormed out of the hotel in a bad mood, maybe to meet someone who had demanded money. Walter Cribbs had also left the building, and Colin Wakes and Kitty's father were also still around.
He didn't like it.
He didn't like it at all. Chapter 27 Matt found Kitty sitting on a table near the bar sipping a cocktail. Her mask lay in front of her. She frowned at him.
Where have you been?
It's a long story.
She was shocked when he told her what had happened to Bobby.
That is so strange. On the other side of town where the poorer houses are, I'm sad to say you expect more crime, but this part of town is very safe and there were so many people about tonight because of the ball.
She glanced at the stage.
Vivian will be very upset.
Bobby didn't want to tell her until she'd finished the show.
Do you think this is to do with the ruby? Kitty asked.
Matt helped himself to a sip of her drink, drawing an indignant glare from Kitty.
Could be. Perhaps they wanted to search him and when it wasn't in his pockets, they took his wallet instead.
Kitty glanced at her watch.
Vivian is about to sing her final number.
He took hold of her hand.
Dance with me?
He had enjoyed their last dance together. It had been a bright moment in an otherwise scary time.
She frowned, uncertainty playing in her eyes at his unexpected request.
All right.
He led her to the dance floor, and he placed his arms around her as Vivian's soulful voice filled the room.
You're a better dancer than Walter Cribbs, Kitty teased.
Why, thank you, Miss Underhay. I'll take that as high praise.
She laughed as he swept her around the floor. She moved well, and he allowed the nightmare of the tunnels to be replaced with happier thoughts and the feel of her slender frame next to his. The music finished, and Vivian began her farewell speech. Kitty and Matt eased their way to the side of the stage, ready to intercept her afterwards. The band leader presented her with a huge bouquet on behalf of the Dolphin, and the show ended.
Vivian!
Kitty hurried up the couple of steps to the stage. The chanteuse frowned when she saw Kitty and Matt.
Thank you for the flowers, Miss Underhay. They were my pleasure. You have a truly wonderful voice.
She paused before adding in a softer tone, Vivian, I have some bad news for you. The older woman paled and swayed on her high heels.
What is it?
I'm so sorry, but Bobby has been attacked tonight outside the hotel, on the embankment. He's all right, but rather battered. The assailant took his wallet.
Where is he?
Vivian asked, alarm showing in her dark brown eyes.
He insisted on returning to your suite. He refused a doctor, Matt said.
Vivian clutched her flowers to her.
I must go to him. That fool man will get himself killed one of these times.
This has happened before, Matt asked.
Vivian's mouth twisted in a bitter line.
He's a white man married to a black woman. We are no strangers to violence.
Her voice was harsh.
Would you like us to come with you? Kitty asked.
Vivian was already walking off the stage.
No, thank you. I can take care of Bobby.
It was after 3 a.m. when Kitty was seated with Matt in her grandmother's suite, her hands around a large cup of warm, sweet milk laced with whiskey.
What a night.
Matt had taken off his tie and undone the collar of his shirt. Kitty was too tired to fight her eyes, which kept stubbornly straying to the dip at the base of his neck. She kicked off her shoes for the last time and stretched out her toes.
My feet have been killing me for at least the last 6 hours.
As she moved, the note she'd tucked into her stocking top hours earlier crackled against her skin. With all the other events of the night, she'd forgotten about it. Exhaustion tugged at every part of her, and she couldn't face looking at the contents of the note right now and discussing it with Matt. If it was from her father, she wanted to read it by herself and see what he had to say before sharing it with anyone else. Matt rose and walked towards the door.
I'll say goodnight. You look all in. Thank you for the dance.
He smiled at her, and her heart gave an unexpected flutter.
Good night. See you tomorrow.
Once he'd gone, she locked the door and pulled the table in front of it to ensure it was secure. She carried the remainder of her drink into the bedroom and undressed. Once she was settled in bed, propped up against a pile of pillows, she sipped the rest of her drink and opened the note.
My dearest Kitty, I had hoped to be able to spend some time with you this evening, but circumstances are against me. I fear that I have to leave this area soon for both my safety and yours. I would dearly love to see you for just a few minutes before I go. It would have been nice if you had found the ruby that Eloed had been guarding for me. But if it's not to be, then that is fate. There are others looking for it who are quite dangerous, and I cannot risk any harm coming to you, my dear child. I have done much in my life to be ashamed of, and little to be proud of. You are the one thing I am most proud of, dear girl. I will be at St. Saviour's Church tomorrow night at 9:30 p.m.,
after the bell ringers finish their practice. I understand the church will be open for a short while. If you could find it in your heart to meet me there to say goodbye, you would make an old man very happy. If not, then I will understand. I wish you health, wealth, and happiness, my dear, for all of your life. Your father, Edgar Underhay. Tears ran freely down Kitty's cheeks as she read her father's note, and she was glad she hadn't shared it with Matt. It was deeply personal, and his sentiments had greatly affected her. She was not so naive as to believe that he might not have had an ulterior motive for wanting to see her, and that he might still hope she'd bring the ruby. She read the note once more before folding it carefully and slipping it inside the Bible she always kept in the drawer next to her bed. She turned out the light and snuggled down to sleep, unable to keep her eyes open any longer. She would decide what to do and whether to tell Matt in the morning. Kitty rose late, her thoughts still no clearer on what she should do. She desperately wanted to see her father, if only to hear his side of events. She longed to know more about his marriage to her mother, and if he could shed any light on what might have happened all those years ago. If what he said in his note was true, and he really was about to leave, then this would be her one and only chance to speak to him. She might never get to see or hear from him again. If she told Matt, she knew he would try and dissuade her from going, or worse still, tell Inspector Greville. Kitty moved the table back into its rightful place and called reception to request that her breakfast be brought to her room. There was also the question of what to do with the ruby. To her mind, it would be much simpler if her father took it and it was gone from her possession. Surely with both the gem and her father gone, normality would return. The maid knocked the door and entered with her tray. Kitty settled herself at the small table her grandmother used for dining and tucked into her scrambled eggs and bacon. She had never been good at thinking on an empty stomach. By the time she had drained her second cup of tea, she had started to feel much better. The more she thought about the murders, the less likely it seemed that her father could be responsible. He didn't know Hubert Fargin, and could hardly have been blackmailed by him. It appeared far more likely that Colin Wakes was the most obvious suspect in all cases, given his record and what they knew so far. It was entirely possible that he had been responsible for assaulting Bobby, especially if he was desperate for money. He wouldn't have taken the flask or Bobby's watch in case he was recognized if he tried to pawn it. Meeting her father would be a big risk, and she would have to find a way of leaving the hotel without Matt discovering she had gone out. Was it foolhardy? Yes, but some things in life were worth taking risks for, and she wasn't stupid. By mid-afternoon, a dull grey drizzle had set in, and Kitty's nerves were starting to fray. Vivian had dined alone in the dining room at lunchtime, having ordered a tray for Bobby, who seemed to be keeping a low profile. "I need to attend the bank," she said to Matt, who had joined her for lunch. She wanted to get out of the hotel to clear her head. "Would you like me to accompany you?" Matt asked. She knew he would find a way to insist on going with her, even if she said she'd rather go alone. In truth, she didn't mind. She would feel safer if he were there. It would also mean he would be less likely to think she would go out alone that evening. It was still raining, a soft, light rain, when they left the hotel. Kitty held her sturdy black umbrella over both their heads. "I really don't wish to ruin another hat. I fear this one has never properly recovered its shape after my last outing in the wet." Their route took them past the entry where Matt had found Bobby a few hours earlier. Kitty couldn't resist taking a peep as they walked past. What had he been up to? He must have gone outside to meet someone. The town was quiet as they walked past the boat float towards the Butter Walk.
The dreary day had obviously deterred the day trippers and holiday makers. Instead, mostly town folk were busy about their daily affairs. Kitty smiled and said hello to a few people she knew in passing. Her business at the bank did not take long, and once concluded, she rejoined Matt outside the florist's, ready to walk back to the hotel. Matt discovered he had a small errand that he needed to run at the post office, as he had been carrying a letter around with him for the past few days which he needed to send to his mother. So they varied their route for the return journey. "We can cut through here," Kitty said, pointing out a narrow entryway which connected the street they were on with the one which ran almost parallel to it. "It's a little quicker and might shelter us from this beastly rain." The alley did give some shelter from the drizzle, and as they emerged onto the street the other side, Kitty gasped and clutched Matt's arm. "Matt, over there, I'm sure, yes, it's Colin Wakes." She recognized Colin from when he used to call for